This is Risky Business News, a podcast with cybersecurity news read and prepared by Cătălin Câmpanu. Risky Business News is brought to you this week by application allow listing software maker Airlock Digital. In our main story today, Google is making major changes to the official Play Store this month. Google is removing the list of permissions an app uses from an app's Play Store listing page. In its place, Google is adding a new section called Data Safety that lists what data the app developer collects from their users, how they handle the data, and if they share it with third parties. The idea behind the change is that an app that lists a long list of permissions might be intimidating for non-technical Android users who might avoid installing it on their devices. One explanation for the removal of the app permission list is that there are cases where permission access is benign and only used for the app's on-device functions and the app developer never collects anything from a user's smartphone. Instead, Google wants the new data safety section to list what exactly each app is collecting and what happens to the data. But a problem with the data safety section is that this information cannot be determined by Google in an automated manner and the company will be relying on what developers agree to disclose. As several cybersecurity and data privacy experts have pointed out on social media, the problem with this approach is that Google didn't need to fully remove the app permissions from the Play Store page, and that now the company is now relying on a pinky promise from app developers not to lie about what happens to user data. Moving on to other tech news, the Danish Data Protection Agency banned the use of Google Workspace by local Danish governments. The agency's decision came in a case involving the city of Helsingør, which was using Chromebooks and Google Workspace apps for administrative tasks, including the management of local schools. The Danish Data Protection Agency banned the use of Google Workspace, formerly known as G Suite, citing Google's hidden data collection practices, which transfer the personal details of Danish citizens abroad to US servers, contrary to EU and Danish legislation. In other tech news, Russia's telecommunications watchdog said in a press release last week that the Twitch video streaming platform has refused to take down fakes about Russia's special operation in Ukraine. These types of press releases usually come before Roskomnadzor moves in to block a service inside Russia's borders, suggesting the country may be ready to ban Twitch altogether. In other news, TikTok announced major changes to its security leadership on Friday as the social media platform faces renewed scrutiny from US lawmakers over its ties to China. According to the record, security chief Roland Cloutier will step down in September, while current security executive Kim Albarella will replace him on an interim basis. Also in tech news, the Tor project has released version 11.5 of the Tor browser. The biggest change in this version is that the Tor browser has adopted the HTTPS-only mode from Firefox. With this version, HTTPS-only mode is enabled by default for all Tor browser desktop users, and the HTTPS Everywhere add-on will no longer be bundled with the Tor browser. In government and policy news, according to a report from Hungarian media, NATO and EU officials have expressed concern with the Hungarian government's silence following a report earlier this year that Russian hackers have been lurking in Budapest's government network for more than a decade, silently stealing confidential information. Now, Western officials said they're more concerned with Hungary's silence on the topic rather than the hacking itself, with the Orbán regime failing to publicly address the incident and failing to share any details or notify its allies. In cybercrime, malware and threat intelligence news, security firm Palo Alto Networks published a report on Friday about a cybercrime group that has been compromising Asterisk voice over IP servers and then deploying malware on connected phones. Palo Alto said the attackers enter servers via an unpatched vulnerability in Elastix, a graphic user interface software package for Asterisk, and then deploy malware and IP phones running the Digium software. The bulk of the campaign took place from late December 2021 till the end of March 2022, the company said. In another interesting report, industrial security firm Dragos said that software advertised on social media as a password recovery and password brute forcing tool for programmer logic controllers also contains a version of the Sality malware. IT engineers working in industrial networks that download and run these tools when they want to unlock PLC software to which they lost passwords may also end up compromising their ICS environments. We also had another interesting report published last Friday, this one from HP's Wolf security team, which documented another malware campaign that used open document text files to distribute malware and target the hotel industry in Latin America. HP said this was the same threat actor and campaign documented by Cisco Talos last summer, which apparently was still going on. Also on the same note, ESET warned last week about a new Meltspam campaign using a lure of a Salesforce security update. The campaign, which delivered Sliver payloads, was particularly interesting because it took place during the Patch Tuesday week, when most users were most likely to fall for it. Also on Friday, cloud security firm Lacework published a report on the recent operations of the Watchdog CoinMiner gang. In a report last year, Palo Alto Networks called Watchdog one of the oldest crypto mining gangs in operation today, and according to Lacework's report, the group is still going strong. In vulnerability-related news, security firm Bishop Fox published details last week about a vulnerability in Netrix Auditor, an IT auditing software package commonly used in corporate environments. Bishop Fox said the vulnerability can allow threat actors to run malicious code on Netrix Auditor servers and then, from there, take over entire Active Directory domain since the Auditor app typically runs with admin privileges. Also on Friday, security firm Checkmarks warned that the GitHub platform allows threat actors to spoof commits on hosted repositories. The company argues that threat actors could spoof code contributions to malicious projects using the identities of trusted open-source developers. By doing so, they can lure users and companies into installing malicious libraries into their environments by making projects look more legitimate than they are. And last but not least, a team of German academics said they developed a new technique that allows them to fuzz test the protected memory areas in modern CPUs. Researchers said the new method helped them discover new vulnerabilities in fingerprint sensors and cryptocurrency wallets by looking at how data is being processed inside Intel SGX enclaves. The research team said the vulnerabilities they found impact the Synaptics fingerprint driver and the Scale crypto wallet, and the bugs can be used to read biometric data and even steal the entire balance of a stored cryptocurrency. This concludes the news portion of our podcast. In our sponsors section, David Cottingham, CEO of Airlock Digital, wanted to touch on a recent SentinelOne report that analyzed recent cybercrime campaigns abusing the APPX and MSIX file formats for malware distribution, which have been quite a few as of lately.
Great research from Alexander Milanowski over at SentinelOne Sentinel Labs, which dives into instances where attackers have leveraged malicious Windows apps using the APX file format for malware deployment. Alexander noted that since Microsoft made some noise that they're tightening macro security, they've seen an uptick in attackers using APX packages to deploy malware. Personally, I'm not really sure that correlation equals causation here, although limiting attackers' options does force them to be creative. In any case, this research is really, really cool because there isn't that many write-ups about the APX format at all, and there is so much complexity here, particularly around the attestation mechanisms of the application. The main takeaway is that if you're an attacker, you have two options right now if you want to deliver sweet, sweet malwares using the APX format. You can steal a digital signature and use it to just sign your own malicious application, and you can deliver it to a victim if they trust the certificate and they have the Windows app sideloading enabled. It's disabled by default in Windows, but enterprises commonly enable it to deploy their own store apps. Or you can create and sign a malicious APX application and you could submit it to the Microsoft Store. However, this way you have to try and bypass any app review validation that may occur there. While the second one hasn't been heavily observed yet, this may represent a really nice way to deliver malicious applications in the future, depending on how good Microsoft's validation process is. So this research was personally really, really interesting for me because it goes into the attestation mechanisms that Windows performs when installing a Windows Store app, also known as an APX application. Now, an APX application is essentially a compressed archive that contains not only the application itself, but it also contains a digital signature and an application manifest that all works together to say that the application that's contained within the archive that you're installing has not been tampered with in transit, and it's from a place that you trust. Microsoft's done a really good job at designing this. However, the whole Microsoft Store and APX ecosystem is only as good as what you trust or who has keys to the ecosystem. But if you want to understand the security mechanisms around Apex packaging, and most importantly, how Windows validates them, this is definitely research that you want to check out.
This is it for today's news. You can find links to all the technical reports mentioned in this podcast in our newsletter at riskybiznews.substack.com, and you can subscribe to our podcast via our website at risky.biz.